Welcome to SBC This Week. I'm Brandon Porter. Laura Erlinson is here with me. Laura, it is Easter weekend.
It is. It's also baseball season. We had our first baseball game last night at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. It was
Very fun. A little cold
still, but great.
It is. Boy, the wind here in Middle Tennessee, South Central Kentucky, where I am, you have beautiful days, sunny, beautiful days. But boy, that wind, as the seasons change.
Yeah. March wind is no joke.
That's right. Yeah. It makes you reach for a sweatshirt or a coat or scarf or something like that. So good times, though. Fun to see spring popping up all around us, all
beautiful.
The events.
Yeah, we had a great time, and I'm really looking forward to this weekend. Yeah,
absolutely. So we're recording this on Friday, March the 29th, and it's Good Friday. Mm-hmm. Laura, do you guys have a Good Friday service?
We don't. We have in sometimes, but we don't have one this year.
Yeah, we do. And that'll be this evening. And so we're excited about that. I always look forward to the Good Friday service, sometimes even more than the Sunday morning Easter service, just because it's quiet and reflective. So looking forward to that tonight. What's something, Laura, when you think about the Easter story, what's something like, where do you go? Where's a place you return to over and over again?
I think probably I would say Mary in the garden. I think as a woman, the way that Jesus treats her, the way he responds to her, it's always just been so touching to me. And so I can relate to her. She's just there doing her thing, doing what the women were supposed to do. And he wasn't there. And she thought he was the gardener. She didn't know where he was. And he was just so tender and loving to her. And she instantly, as soon as he called her name, she knew, she knew it was him, and she didn't need to be convinced. And I love that.
Yeah. I think that there are some wonderful pictures, around the Easter passages of who Christ is and what he does in our lives all the time. And so right there, right in the midst of deep heartbreak, he's there with her. Boy, that's powerful. I love the road to Emmaus, later on the resurrection day, that Jesus walks that 7 miles with them or so from Jerusalem to Emmaus. And, there's just the irony that's there where they ask him, are you the only one in Jerusalem who doesn't know what's happened?
How do you not know this?
That's something to take that in. But really, you know, as he then unpacks from all the way back to Moses, all the way through, he unpacks for them the Bible, pointing it all to the Christ. He's really the first to share the gospel. Jesus is the first to share the gospel after the resurrection. What a powerful reminder. What a powerful reminder to us, especially as Great Commission Christians who, you know, our desire is to go out and to spread the name and to spread that story and to make disciples. Such a beautiful picture there. So, well, we hope that you have a great Easter weekend. We're going to have some more Easter items a little bit later in the podcast. We're glad that you're listening with us. Laura, let's go to Washington, D.C. This has been a busy week for the ERLC, some things happening there. And the first is maybe a phrase that I've learned over the last couple of weeks in working with the ERLC that I really like. I'm going to try to figure out how to use it in some sentences.
And I think I know where this is going.
It's the word minibus.
I knew it. Minibus.
That's right.
Yeah, I thought that's, I went to a little Christian school as a kid and they had a minibus.
I'm going to try to ease that into a Baptist business meeting if I can. So this budget package you're trying to pass is actually just kind of a minibus, right?
That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's kind of a mixed bag. I guess that's the word that we use in the headline of the BP story, that there's some good elements to it, things that Southern Baptists would be pleased about, and then some other things that we wouldn't be. The good stuff includes a lot of amendments that protect the sanctity of life, including the Hyde Amendment, which has been sort of the mainstay of those kind of amendments for a long time now, for decades. The Hyde Amendment saves an estimated 60,000 unborn lives every year. And what it essentially prevents Medicaid from covering the cost of an abortion. And then the Weldon Amendment, the Helms Amendment, the Smith Amendment, and the Dornan Amendment. And all of those are named for different lawmakers over the years that have worked these amendments into spending bills so that tax money doesn't go to pay for abortions. And so you can read more about those in the BP story. But of course, as always, there are things in this bill that we didn't like.
Yeah.
It includes funding for some family planning programs that would promote abortion. It includes gender care, quote unquote, for veterans. And then international funds like the United Nations Population Fund, which funnels money into pro-abortion organizations. So, of course, as always, you can't be entirely pleased with these things.
So that was a long process. I know the ERLC was involved in that, in the fiscal portion of what's been going on in Congress since back late last summer, actually. So bringing that to a conclusion. Also, Laura, this week on Capitol Hill, just behind the Capitol there at the Supreme Court, they heard arguments on the legality, I guess, of mifepristone. It was a case that surrounds an August 2023 decision made by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. It placed limitations on the availability and usage of mifepristone, which is the abortion pill. There's been a push that the ruling of the appeals court would end the availability of the drug by mail and allow only the drug to be used through the 10th week of pregnancy. That's been challenged. It was argued this week before the Supreme Court. There were a number of folks from ERLC there present, not necessarily in the courtroom so much, but just there in Washington, D.C. It's very limited. Many times you can't even get into the Supreme Court right now to hear those arguments, just kind of post-COVID policy still in place in some of those hearings. And so the ruling puts on hold, put on hold by the Supreme Court until their decision would reverse the changes made in 2016 and 2021, which removed previously established limitations on the use of mifepristone. And so it's been legal and available since 2000. And this would be a significant change if it were to come. And so we'll wait, and the Supreme Court should have a ruling on that a little bit later this summer. Laura, those rulings come out about the same time as the SBC annual meeting happens.
I know. We are always in, our hearts are in two places. Or
yeah.
In, of course, wherever the annual meeting is, but also wherever in D.C., waiting on those Supreme Court decisions. And sometimes they do come out, these big ones come out when we're right in the middle of annual meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of annual meeting, we had an announcement from ERLC just yesterday on Thursday, March the 25th, a big announcement from them, Laura.
Yeah, speaking of annual meeting, that's right. The former Vice President Mike Pence will join the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission on Tuesday for a luncheon. He'll have a conversation with ERLC President Brent Leatherwood on serving in the public square. It's aimed at helping pastors partner with elected officials in engaging the public square. Mm. Now, the tickets are available. They're $20. It's at 11:30 on Tuesday. But I actually went to the annual meeting website this morning to see what this is competing with. And let me tell you, this is the day. This is the hour that you wish you could clone yourself.
Yeah.
Because the minister's wife luncheon is happening. The For the Church luncheon is happening. Let me see. I got the list in front of me here. The B21 panel is happening. Mm. The Small Church Pastors luncheon is happening. All of that is happening at the same time as the ERLC luncheon. That's just how it is. You have to pick the most important to you and do it. So I'm interested to see how that event goes. hopefully there'll be video of it that if you can't make it, you can watch it later. And another ERLC announcement yesterday, they have announced a new fellow, a senior fellow, Rashawn Frost, who's the pastor of the Bridge Church in Charleston, South Carolina. He's conducted research in Christian ethics with an emphasis on social ethics and human dignity, political theology, as well as the intersection of ethics, faith, and public life. And so interesting to see what Rashawn Frost will do there at the ERLC as a new senior fellow.
Yeah. Interesting reading his bio for that story. He got 2 degrees from Auburn University, and he's a former football player. His former
I know.
Auburn
Why
Tiger.
Do we have a lot of Auburn football players on
that's
this podcast?
Two. Yep, that's two here recently. So War Eagle, I guess.
Watch your mouth.
Well, they didn't war very much in the NCAA basketball tournament now, did they? So
yikes.
there you go.
No.
That's for some of
Well,
you listening out there. You know who you are.
I wasn't going to bring it up
I don't
because I know what happened to you most recently.
Good grief. It's been, yeah. Anyway, sorry. We better keep focused here. Chaos in Kentucky over college basketball. That's for sure. Oh, my goodness. So, all right. Several stories this week. It was just interesting as the week unfolded. There was a real focus on Asian Southern Baptist and celebration and also trying to equip and come alongside to help. And so, Laura, let's start with this first story that IMB held an event for Asian Baptists.
Yeah, we had a story just last week. I talked about on the podcast about an event for Hispanic Baptist leaders. And then this week, there was a story about a meeting of Asian Baptist leaders at the at the IMB. Mm-hmm. Ezra Bay is the IMB's Asian Church Mobilization Strategist. And Asians are the largest ethnic group, minority ethnic group, serving as missionaries with IMB. But still, they represent a very small number of Asian churches. There are so many more Asian churches that, as Ezra Bay says, it's just kind of a lack of awareness. He said, I talk to pastors all the time that just don't know about the IMB, that don't know the resources that we provide. Many IMB resources are available in Chinese and Korean. And so a lot of our churches, Southern Baptist churches, just his job is to just make them aware of what resources are available to you and what missions pathways are available to your church members. And so that's an interesting story there out of Richmond this week.
Very good. Very good. And then up in Brooklyn, New York, Marilyn Stewart wrote a fantastic story on the Brooklyn Chinese Baptist Church celebrating 50 years, Laura. Mm-hmm. So a major milestone, a church that was planted by Mark Wee and his wife, Florence. I love the little paragraph that said the actual start was harder. And despite the 300 flyers distributed announcing the church service, the first one in March of 1974, it included only three adults, two of whom were Wee and his wife, Florence. Just humble beginnings, but the Lord's faithfulness and determination to keep going forward in gospel ministry, it has produced great fruit there for the Brooklyn Chinese Baptist Church and for the glory of God over these last 50 years.
Yeah, amazing. He started it at 30 years old, and he is now 82.
Wow.
And he is now sort of retiring. His son is taking over leadership of the church, but he said really retirement is not an option, that they'll still be, he'll still be. I think a lot of pastors are like that.
Yeah.
They're still going to be in ministry, just maybe not full time.
Yeah. I know a certain seminary president who seems to have kind of the same.
Good point.
Same
That's
tone.
Fair. Okay.
Yeah, same tenor. So speaking of, there's a little segue. Laura, this week, a couple of Jeff Ward stories at Baptist Press. Since we have spoken last, there was Dr. Orge's press conference following the special call meeting in Dallas. And so that story is at Baptist Press. And he talked about a number of the things that are facing the EC as he comes into leadership. He is now the president-elect and will assume the elect part will drop off May 13th is when it drops off. And then we had a story this week. Scott Barkley wrote a story for us, went back and talked to some of the search committee members that talked about how not only in their committee, but in other committees and over a process of time, a common denominator kept appearing, and that was Jeff Orge.
Yeah, I really like this story because I think some people maybe have the misperception that Orge was sort of a last ditch effort or Hail Mary pass or whatever. And this story kind of debunks that a little bit, that he was the first choice for a lot of people from the beginning, but the timing just didn't work out. And so for even though the EC has been without a full-time president for over 2 years now, it wasn't because nobody had thought of Jeff Orge. They had thought of him and had asked him, but just the timing hadn't worked out until now. And it was really neat to hear that from some of those search team members and just to be reassured that, you know, God's timing is not our timing and he has a plan. So
that's right. Sometimes that. we have to wait on the Lord. And his timing is best. That's exactly right. Also, this week we've had some more announcements for candidates at the annual meeting this summer in Indianapolis. Laura, one of those being Nathan Finn, who is the current recording secretary. And we learned this week that he will be nominated again for the third term in his tenure by South Carolina Baptist Executive Director Treasurer Tony Wolf plans to nominate Nathan Finn for a third term this coming summer.
Nathan, you might remember, he's a professor at University of North Greenville in South Carolina, and he also has served at various churches and at Union University and other places. And he'll be on his third term this time as recording secretary. So he's probably just now getting the hang of it because it's a big job.
Yeah. There are lots of details. He is a teaching pastor at Taylor's First Baptist Church there in South Carolina. The church reported taking in $5.169 million and a little bit more in total designated receipts, gave a little bit more than $521,000 through the cooperative program. So that's 10.1%, Laura. So
that's
generous.
Great.
Yep, generous giving there.
Exemplary.
Absolutely. So, and strong giving as well, over almost $87,000 to the Annie Armstrong offering, just a little over $157,000 to Lottie Moon. And so just very faithful there in their support of cooperative program efforts and to our missions organizations. Another one this week, Laura, Michael Pardue is going to be nominated. He is a pastor at First Baptist Church of Icard. That's in Connolly Springs, North Carolina.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's Icard or Icard.
It's Icard, yeah.
It is. Oh, good.
I had a conversation with a North Carolinian this week. And through investigative reporting, I learned that they pronounced it Icard. Yes.
Nice. Yes. I like it. Well, J. Allen Murray is going to be nominating him, another North Carolina pastor. And he said, "I've had the privilege of serving beside him in the boardroom and the mission field and seeing his character on display firsthand." He said that he has a heart for missions, both local and abroad, that inform his life and ministry, and that First Baptist Icard has made a gospel impact around the globe. So Pardue's church, like you said, that First Baptist there, reported undesignated receipts of $255,000 last year and gifts of $22,250, so 8.7% through the cooperative program.
Yeah.
Also very good. And then $5,500 or so to Lottie Moon Christmas offering, $1,800 to Annie Armstrong. So a giving church there in North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, there was also a presidential forum this week held on social media. It was hosted by Tom Askell. It was a Twitter space or an X space. I don't know what you call it now.
It's hard for me to change.
Yeah. So the four known presidential candidates participated in that. And let's see, those four known candidates are Jared Moore, the pastor of Homesteads Baptist Church in Crossville, Tennessee; Clint Presley, pastor of Hickory Grove Baptist Church in Charlotte; Mike Keybone, pastor of First Baptist Church in Lawton, Oklahoma; and David Allen, professor and dean at Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary. And Laura, the discussion took about just a little bit more than an hour and 45 minutes, and it was pretty wide ranging.
Yeah, it's a pretty long story there in BP, but it doesn't feel long because the topics are changing throughout the story because they talked about all kinds of things that you might expect they would talk about. The law amendment, transparency in the SBC, of course, the sexual abuse and how to deal with that. And so a lot of topics of interest in the SBC. So go check out that story by Scott Barkley and inform yourself before you get to Indianapolis.
Yeah. So, and speaking of that, we've been working this week to get the candidates scheduled ourselves for Baptist Press. And the game plan is to interview them on video and then write a story about that interview. But the interview video will be unedited, and we'll have a number of questions that will try to be similar in what we ask each of the candidates. and then allow you to either watch or listen to the story or both. It's a format that we used last year with Bart Barber and Mike Stone, and we're going to go back to that this year. So we've been working. Hopefully that will happen, those interviews, when things will all come together in April, and then we'll be ready to roll that out in early May. So keep listening for more details on that. All right. So, Laura, let's come back to Easter. We had a study from Lifeway this week on Easter high attendance. And so hopefully this will be an encouragement to pastors and church leaders as they are excited about this coming Lord's Day when we get to celebrate the resurrection. We can do that every week when we get together. Mm. We do that when we get yes. together. But again, the calendar marks this as Easter Sunday, and so some added enthusiasm for that. And Laura, this is an encouraging study, I think.
Yeah, I think maybe not surprising, mm-hmm. but still encouraging. 90% of pastors identify Easter as either their first, second, or third highest attendance for the year. I would say at my church that tracks. Easter is usually our highest. Mm-hmm. Mother's Day is maybe a close second. And then Christmas is right behind that. And mm-hmm. that pretty much tracks with this story. Most people actually say that Christmas is ahead of Mother's Day. I would mm-hmm. think that's probably not the case at my church.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that, yeah, just these pastors, like I said, 90%, that's pretty much every church is going to see a big crowd on Sunday. And that's exciting. It's
absolutely.
And we should, looking forward to that, praying about it. How could that change our church? How could that change our communities?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've been out in our neighborhood to invite our guests over the last week or so, and just looking forward to welcoming some new faces and sharing the gospel and celebrating together with them all that God has done with us and for us. All right. So, Laura, connected to the resurrection, you had a unique idea, I don't know, a week or so ago, and it has morphed into just a fantastic story. And so great job on the story. But tell us a little bit about it, about scientist James Tour. You're just fascinated by him.
I am. So this is becoming a little bit of a hobby of mine where I mm-hmm. follow these really smart guys who are apologists for the Christian mm-hmm. faith, scientists. And I've read several of their books and follow them and watch their YouTube videos and things like that. James Tour is one of those, and he is a professor and a scientist at research professor at Rice University in Houston. Mm-hmm. He's been there a long time, and he is extremely impressive. If you look at his resume, he holds like more than 200 patents. He has done groundbreaking research in nano engineering. Mm. He's focusing on repairing spinal columns of people with spinal injuries
wow.
and has seen great success with that. I mean, it's just amazing the stuff that he has done. And I've sort of been a fan for a while, but I saw him on a video a couple weeks ago, actually not even that long ago, maybe a week ago. And where he talked about how he leads people to Christ using the resurrection.
Hmm.
And giving them the proofs for the resurrection. And I didn't realize that he did that, but he invites people to spend an hour with him. Typically it's on Zoom because these are people from all over the place.
Mm.
And he kind of goes through the story and he goes through the proofs of the resurrection and talks a lot about it. And so I heard him interviewed or he wasn't, this actually wasn't what the interview was about, but he ended up talking about the fact that he does this. And I thought, I wonder if he'd be willing to talk to me about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up, and he also teaches a Sunday school class at West University Baptist Church in Houston, right off the
wow.
campus there at Rice, which is a Southern Baptist church.
Mm.
And so I thought, well, even better. I'm going to see if he'll let me interview him. So I reached out to him. He emailed me back within just a couple hours and was absolutely, he would love to do it. And so we set up the interview and we did it via Zoom. And he kind of did with me what he does with people all the time. Where he just leads them through the proofs of the resurrection
mm.
and he ends up, almost all of them end up accepting Christ. Now he says it's sort of a self-selected audience. He said, most of these people that want to talk to me kind of already believe the resurrection a little bit, or they wouldn't want to talk to me about it. That's
mm-hmm.
what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
But I love what he said. One of the things he said was, he talked about the man in Mark chapter 9 that asks Jesus to heal his son.
Mm-hmm.
And, and he said, heal him if you can. And Jesus says, what do you mean if I can, you know, I can do anything basically. And the man says, well, I believe, but help my unbelief.
Mm.
And Jesus didn't say, well, go back and try to get to 100% of belief. And then you come back and I'll heal your son. No, he said he immediately healed his son.
Mm.
And so you don't have to have 100% faith. You just have to have a little bit, and the Lord will help your unbelief. And I just thought that was so profound. And he tells people that all the time. And he tells them after they have prayed to receive Christ with him over our Zoom call, he gives them kind of an assignment. And he tells them, he said, look, there's a little seed in your heart that is now sprouted and it's going to start growing. So just be prepared for a change in your life and your attitude. He encourages them to start reading the scripture. He gives them like specific assignments on how to do that. So he does this on Zoom 2 or 3 times a week, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also teaches a Sunday school class, like I said, every Sunday at West University Baptist Church, which can have like 60 to 100 people in the class.
Yeah.
And he invites them all to his house for lunch after church. And they many of them come, and he does the same thing there in person.
Yeah.
And I thought, what an inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, here's this guy who's a world renowned scientist and is really busy. I'm sure really busy teaching classes, doing research, publishing. You should see the papers he's published. Mm. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of peer-reviewed papers and stuff. But he finds the time to share Christ with people regularly.
Yeah.
And it was very exciting and just a great conversation. I had such fun writing the story and doing the interview.
Well, it's really good. Yeah, it's a great story. Very informative, encouraging, but also convicting. You know, mm-hmm. to think about that we all ought to be intentional in looking for ways and avenues to share our faith. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah. So good job. And thank you for sharing that with us. Looking forward to folks reading that. All right, here we go. History all moment right. time.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it. I found this release from April 5th, 1954.
Okay.
This is in the Baptist Press. All of these little bulletins are very short in Baptist Press that particular day.
Hmm.
But this one caught my eye. This is the headline, Leave White Shoes at Home When Going to SVC in June.
Okay.
So here's the lead. Men, leave your white shoes and Panama hats at home when you go to St. Louis for the Southern Baptist Convention. Else many a native will see you and say, there goes another man from the South. So the local arrangements chairman, which at the time they called the local publicity committee, apparently.
Okay. Okay.
Was a pastor, a Missouri pastor named James T. Shirley. And he says that white shoes and straw hats are not worn much in St. Louis in early June. And so you would stick out like a sore thumb, basically, if you went to St. Louis in your white shoes and your Panama hat. So don't do that. And so I don't know if you have any white buck shoes, Brandon?
Not anymore.
Okay.
No.
Because, you know, you're an Elvis fan and maybe you're a little bit of a rockabilly fan. So maybe you have some white shoes. I don't know. Elvis, I know you have blue suede shoes because I've seen them.
Yeah, it's more blue suede shoes. So, yeah.
Yes. But if you do have them, don't wear them to the annual meeting.
Yeah.
And this is kind of Easter related too, because when I grew up, I don't feel like this is the rule anymore, but it used to be that nobody could wear white shoes until after Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Like Easter was the day you could pull out your white patent leather shoes and wear them, and you could wear them all the way through Labor Day. And after that, you got to put them back in the closet.
Yeah. But, yeah. That whole white after Easter thing, that's just over now.
I know. Nobody has rules anymore like that. But
that's right.
But it was a rule when I was a kid. At least my grandmother told me it was a rule. I don't know.
that's true. Yeah. You get your cheeks pinched for that or something.
So
like
no
that.
White shoes before Easter or at the annual meeting.
That's right. So, so, you know, I can think of Jay Adkins would really struggle with that, I think. he might have a big problem with that. But then I can also think Bart Barber might, I mean, he should consider that perhaps, you know?
What, wearing white shoes with his suit?
And his Panama hat. So,
he should. Well, I remember, I think when J.D. Greer was president, he wore like white Jordans up on the platform one time. I wonder if that counts. I don't know.
Probably, you know, did he walk really, did he keep his feet really straight so he didn't crease the toe?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Golly.
Yeah,
it's, my daughter does that, but no, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, interesting history moment. You just never know what we're
You
going to
never know. I
talk
love it.
through. That's right. From presidential history moments to Panama hats at the annual meeting. So there you go. Well, we sure do thank you for listening to SBC this week. Laura, a little housekeeping piece. It looks like folks will have us for a few more weeks. That president-elect title, as we've shared several times, that means that Jonathan's title will remain the interim president CEO of the EC. And so we're going to hold on for just a little bit longer until that move happens in May. And then that's when you will be rid of Brandon and Laura on
Yes.
SBC this week.
No more Panama hats after that.
That's right.
Yep.
That's true. So, well, thank you, Laura. Hope you have a wonderful Easter weekend.
You too. Thank
Thank you.
you. And as always, we had lots of stories on BP this week that didn't get a chance to make it into this podcast just for lack of time. And so check those out at baptistpress.com. Thanks for listening.